On this episode of the Climbing Arborist podcast, we have Chris Coates. Now, if you don't know much about Chris Coates, Chris is just the most likable guy you can ever meet. He's so passionate, he's so friendly, so knowledgeable. He loves tree climbing competitions, as you're going to hear from this podcast. He started his own competition, the North American Open Masters, and he just took all the parts that he liked from tree climbing competitions, got rid of the parts that he didn't like, and he created this amazing competition that has got such a following now. It's picked up such momentum, got a lot of sponsors behind him, so he's obviously doing something right. So thank you very much to Chris for giving up his time and taking some time out of the day at the TCI Expo, which was a hectic place to be, so really appreciate it. This podcast was recorded on location at the Jobber booth at the TCI Expo 2019. So obviously there's going to be some background noise, but I hope you enjoy the podcast. Chris was a super interesting guy, and hopefully he'll be back on the podcast soon because I felt like we only just got started. This podcast is also sponsored by Jobber Business Software. Jobber is an online business software that can be implemented into any style of business, but it works especially well for arborist companies. I use it in my own business, and it has made such a huge difference. I own and run quite a small tree company, so I didn't know that it would be that much help and like how much more time it's going to save me on the admin side, because I didn't feel like I had a lot. But as soon as I started implementing it, it saves me so much time just from doing quotes on the app out on site when I'm actually on the property, to then being able to invoice as soon as I get in my truck from completing a job. It means that I don't forget to send invoices, which I have been guilty of in the past and probably lost quite a lot of money from. It also lets you manage your crews, so all of your crew can have the app on their phone, and once that person is selected for a specific job on the desktop version, that person, once they open their app, will see the job, will see all the details, will see the client's information, and it can be restricted also on how much detail they see if you don't want them to see the cost of the job, all that kind of stuff. It's very versatile. And it's absolutely amazing software, and it's really changed the way that I run my business. It's just made everything just so much easier. So if you want to try out Jobber, then the best thing to do is go to the website, climbingarborist.com, and you'll see the link, the image for Jobber across the top of the page. If you click on that link, what that will get you is a 14-day free trial, but it'll also get you 20% off your first 6 months subscription. So go to the climbingarborist.com website, click on the Jobber banner, and you'll get 14-day free trial, and you'll also get 6 months subscription at 20% discount. I can't say enough about Jobber. It's been absolutely fantastic for me using it so far, and I couldn't imagine going back to the Stone Age way that I was running my business before. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Chris was a super interesting guy, and hopefully he'll be back on the podcast soon because I felt like we only just got started.
I did one with Jeff Inman morning, yeah,
cool.
Which was wicked.
I thought about, I started getting into the podcast, competing so much. I was like, I feel like I'm pretty well positioned to talk to people about this stuff. I've probably competed over 100 times. And been to that, at least that many events, and for, you know, and then helped with a number as well. Anyway, Jeff would be a good guy to interview. He's doing some cool shit.
Yeah, Jeff was awesome to interview, and I just, because of the area rescue challenge that he came to in that presentation, that really made him like probably the person I wanted to speak to the most, just to like question him and quiz him on climbing on two ropes, and like I'm fascinated by that because I know I've tried it, and for somebody to be doing that on a you know, out at work in a production
somehow
setting,
he's out to try to
amazing.
Figure out if he can be monetarily efficient, time efficient, using two ropes for trees.
Yeah.
And people have done it. I was who wasn't using tube Blake stitches back in the day when we needed to, you know, to isolate your movement and get in position for a cut?
Yeah.
Like, the concept's been around.
With the evolution of the equipment that we use, it's kind of...
It's made it easier. Oh, yeah.
Especially because, you know, like Jeff said, it would be so hard to do it on, like, two moving rope systems. So
and the protect fact that, branches.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for joining me.
Are we doing this?
We're doing this.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Really appreciate you kind of giving up some time. So,
I just... Are we filming too?
We're filming too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
just ignore that.
Cool.
So I want to hear a bit about Chris Coates. Kind of who you are, how you kind of got into the industry, and then a bit about the North American Open Masters that you competition that you started.
I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah. So you, you go,
dude. And first of all, honestly, thank you for having me on this podcast with you and. This is an exciting time. I feel special honored to be on the podcast with you, Mr. Holiday. All right, so my name is Chris. I got into arboriculture right around 17 and a half, 18 years old, pretty close to my birthday. But I dropped out of school probably about 16 years old, and I started working at a concrete recycling plant and then went into a myriad of other jobs like... dishwashing. I was a prep cook at a restaurant for a while, and I did roofing. And then when I was about 17, 18, I got into arboriculture and just stuck with it ever since. Worked for Bartlett for years. Put in about 5 years with them and about 3 years with another small company in Maryland, and then started my own business, Advanced Arboriculture, a small little mom and pop tree company, honestly. We're small potatoes, and I like it that way.
Yeah, yeah. That's the same with me. I run a... It couldn't be any smaller, really. And that's how I want to keep it. And because it keeps the stress levels down.
Yes.
And it means that I can go out and do things that I enjoy doing.
Yeah, we elected to downsize. I had two crews at one point, and I think we were running about 7 employees. And then I elected just pretty much cold turkey to downsize and reduce the amount of equipment that we had, but increase the quality of that equipment. To be more productive, and started having more of a laser focus on making sure my employees were well-educated, properly equipped, and trying to get a hold of people, or if not create people, to become passionate about arboriculture and to get a better product out of your employees.
Yeah. And you know, the more employees you have, the harder it is to...
Oh, yeah.
..to kind of... monitor everybody, make sure everybody is like up to standard with like safe work practices, and everybody's keeping the quality of the work high and all that kind of stuff.
Dude, I'm telling you, I had all the expenditures when you're trying to, the economy of scale, and for me, I wanted to work somewhere that I wanted to work, and I wanted to own a business that I was proud to work for, honestly. And I didn't really know what that meant, like what that would look like to me, because anywhere I ever worked, if I worked for Bartlett or the other small tree company out of Maryland, Ballard Enterprises, we were grinders. We worked really hard. We did not really let up. It was 50 hours a week, and worked with those companies through the economy when it got rough. That was interesting. But anyway, I started realizing that I was running my company the same way that I was working myself when I worked for those big companies. And I thought to myself, well, what do I really want? I want time off. I don't give a shit if I get paid for it. Because, time is our most valuable resource. And I was the worst boss I ever had. I never gave myself time off. And I had a couple other hippie tree climber friends that had small tree companies at the time. And I would watch them, and I'm like, that dude's happier than me. I want to be closer to that. I want to figure out how to get there. And so I just started making those changes to our business and giving myself time off. And now I work maybe 3 weeks out of a month, and I'm taking about a week off, typically unpaid time. But if I can travel somewhere and be involved with training somewhere or putting on a competition or competing, I'll do that, or travel just to climb somewhere. I'm really chasing that dream and almost creating it at the same time.
Awesome. So you're still, like, a lot of the time, even when you travel, you're still keeping it within the industry, but because it's not that kind of that tree work, it feels like kind of time off, and it feels like relaxing time. Yes. even if you're involved and you're hanging out with other arborists, and you, even if you're going rec climbing, but it just kind of has a different feel to
it. Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not much into picking up a chainsaw when I'm not at work. You know, I know some guys might want to get together, like, let's go do this job together. And I'm like, I'm so over it. Once I punch that clock, so to speak, at work, I am done. I'm trying to catch a movie. I want to go get up in a tree. I want to live life.
Yeah.
Because life should not be all about work. I honestly, as a workers' rights advocate, I am. And as a human rights, someone who believes strongly in human rights, you know, that's a lot of my thoughts and ideas and things that I've learned over time about, you know, workers' rights and human rights have led me to construct a place that I want to work. And that, one of those primary things is giving yourself time off to rest your body, and then making sure you're working hard to maintain your mental health, which is an important component of our work because of the stress.
Yeah.
And I tell my wife all the time, I'm like, look, if I make less money because we're living life this way, I'm okay with that because I'm happy. What's crazy is that we're making every bit as much money, if not more, than when we were working 4 days, 5 days a week and 5 weeks a month. You know, so if I do go out of town, the folks who are working for me will kind of keep things rolling, but I work hard to make sure they're taking time off and that they're resting their body when they need to, because those are all things that I ended up suffering from coming up in the business. I had back surgery last year, and that was because of a cumulative effect over time of, you know, compression of the spine, most likely from lifting wood year after year, shoulder carrying shit to the back of the truck. And I vowed to myself that I would not continue to do tree work if I had to do things kind of the old way. I'm fine to work hard, but we need to get the most out of our lives, the most out of our bodies. So we invested in equipment to lift for us, and because those things are just a way to empower ourselves. You know, what are you going to do with all this knowledge that we come up with and all the things that we learn? If you never implement them, it's useless, right?
Yeah.
But anyway,
the thing is, as well, is this industry generally has quite a high turnover of staff. So if you can run a business that's really enjoyable to work for, you're not one of those bosses that people then ask for time off. Like, you're actually encouraged the time off. You're providing, like, the good quality equipment. You're really invested in, like, safety and stuff. That if I could work somewhere like that, that would make me stay there, which puts less stress on you because you don't have this turnover of mm-hmm. staff all the time, and so then it becomes a more enjoyable place for you. You're having time off, you guys are having time off, so when you're actually working, everybody's excited to be at work.
They're amped.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to people about this very idea a lot over the past couple days. You know, big companies like Google found if they went to a 4-day work week that their employees were 40% more productive.
Yeah.
And so there's a number of other examples of that within big industries.
I think
industry.
Like in Sweden or somewhere they do that as well. They do six hour work days or something. Yeah,
People need to start getting that kind of stuff figured out so that we can continue, honestly, to start advancing humanity.
Yeah, so you're not just burning people out and then on to the next.
Yeah. I mean, our bodies are really, they're kind of meant to be used as tools. But at the same time, we have to start recognizing and in search for why we're here and enjoy our time while we're on this planet. You know, this is an amazing place, and to, you know, live your whole life working, it's honorable. I mean, I love being a blue collar guy. I love being that guy, right? And I connect with that. But I also, you know, again, I recognize the necessity, that the idea that time is our most valuable resource, you know, tenfold to money. You can make more money.
I completely agree with where you're coming from, and it's kind of how, especially since I started my own company, it's how I've started to live life. Because I used to run a tree company back in the UK before I moved out to Canada, and we had like 8 employees, and I was just stressed nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
And so now I've decided my tree company is going to be as small as it possibly can be. I'm going to take the time where I need it, do trips away where I need it, and keep like that. Anyway.
Be selfish for your time. You have to. Be actively selfish.
Tell me about North American Open Masters and where the idea came from and what's the setup of the competition?
Great question. Full disclosure, I'll be completely honest. I've talked about this with a number of friends over the years, but not everyone knows this. I ended up winning the first Jambo, and I enjoyed the comp, loved the culture of it. And that's an important word that I use there, because it's something that over time we've recognized that there is a tree climbing culture that exists within comps, within tree climbing. And I love the idea of a competition being able to make that connection with the climbers about, you know, climber culture. And what I mean by that is people showing up who are, it's not so much industry focused. It's very, very much about community. And it's also about allowing people to have fun. Obviously creating boundaries for safety. But honestly, you know, where Naomi came from was I went to Jambo, enjoyed it, had fun. Did not believe everything was perfect about it, and I know people know how I feel about that. But I also, you know, saw some things with the ISA comps. I love the ISA comps. Been involved with them for over 15 years, competing and involved with TCCs. But I thought that there were things there that, you know, culturally weren't great. You know, people would greet you with a weird attitude, or they'd be grumpy, or you know, too heavily, you know, too much about the rules and being really sticklers about that kind of stuff. And I felt like there was some Goldilocks porridge in there somewhere in between. I felt like I wanted to create a competition that allowed climbers to really just be themselves, to be in an environment amongst other people who love to climb, not just industry professionals.
Yep.
If you know where I'm coming from. And it's taken me a long time to articulate, because it's a growing thing that's evolving in my mind about how, you know, if I could put my finger on what Naomi is, that competition is one that is purpose-built for other people who don't love to climb trees but are fucking wackadoodle about it, who love, absolutely love to climb trees and compete. And we all recognize, at least out here in the States, we recognize that, you know, there's that culture that exists, and people wanted to start traveling. They wanted to compete outside of ISA competitions for a number of reasons. You know, they wanted that shot, to that opportunity to compete in the Masters. And that's something that Naomi provides. If you have had the luxury of getting into an ISA Masters challenge, it's an incredible experience. It's been powerful for me. I think I've competed in as many as 50 Masters challenges in my time of competing. And I probably didn't win half of those, I'm sure of it, but I was just so stoked to get in. And I was like, we have to figure out a way to share this experience, to set this stage for competitors and climbers. Because honestly, that's another thing that Naomi is about. It's a way that I feel that I can lift up our industry and create a stage for these competitors, these working class heroes, people who are doing incredible work, dangerous work, hazardous work throughout the US and wherever. And I wanted them to have an opportunity to demonstrate their skills and their craft and really have just a blast doing it. So a couple things that are special, we have music playing throughout the day to create that vibe. And one of the things that I recognized over the years from training for TCCs and wrecking, really they're one and the same, that word wrecking and training are one and the same for me, because we found ourselves, you'd get up in a tree and you dangle about for a bit. I call it dangle about. You just get up there, you hang out, shoot the shit, whatever. You have a good time taking a view. I love all that stuff. But over time, that climbing evolved. And I said, well, we do this dangle about. We're only up there for 20 minutes to an hour, but I really want to climb more. So we started making goal-oriented recreational climbing where, you know, just like a comp, you'd hang bells. But we took it further. And, you know, we created training where we would have Masters challenges. And so it was a very disciplined time where you'd get together with a few of your buddies, and we still do this. We train this way very often. But you hang four or five bells, and your goal is, just like a Masters, you want to display the skill of setting the line, ascending into the tree, moving throughout the crown, gear retrieval within an allotted time. But it's not about, you know, we're training to get better at climbing, not necessarily to go faster. You want to complete the task, but it's just a very disciplined time of training. So that training kind of led into ideas about how we could make a competition format like that, where we could take what we love to do with recreation and, again, turn it into tree climbing. So, but anyway, long story short, one of the reasons we have Evo there below Naom obviously denotes evolution is I think that ISA, and I'll say ISA because they've created, honestly, this great game. It's an incredible game. You know, great structure and rules and integrity in the sport, and I love that. I have a lot of respect for the tree climbing competition game, you know. But I felt like they never really set out to create a game that could evolve quickly enough. I mean, you've seen tree climbing explode in the past 10 years with single rope technique, right? So, love you too, dude. Mike Zettel behind the camera. So, my point is, yeah, Naom Evolution is about everything that we can do to take the game to the next level. Where I think, at least, tree climbing in the U.S. wants to see tree climbing move to in the next decade. And I think that everything from transparency with our finances to making sure the athletes or competitors who are showing up are trained and ready and vetted, their skills are vetted, making sure the volunteers and judges and techs, I'm not assuming, hey, that guy's been in the industry for 20 years, throw him in the ring and put a score sheet behind his hand. We're training those people too. And not just Naom, because I don't know if you've heard about this, but we have prerequisites for our competitors. We have prerequisites for the volunteers. And I think initially people thought that would be a tall order, like no one would abide by the standard. They'd be like, well, how the hell are you going to get volunteers if you tell them that they can't run a score sheet if they don't do a dry run? How's that going to go down? I was horrified. I was honestly horrified to take that on because I wanted to put people in a position, yes, where they literally have to demonstrate their skill. You know what I mean? And I when I first brought these ideas out years ago, people called me salty. You know, and they said shit to me that honestly was offensive, but I had a lot of foresight about where I thought how the game could improve. And you have to increase the quality of your judging. If you're going to have an event that is that has discretion, right, and not just a timed event, you've got to teach those people how to judge.
Yeah, you got to understand tree climbing and every aspect of it to give those discretionary points. Yeah.
And someone's going to probably get all upset for hearing me say this, but a lot of the cats who are in those rings, ISA events, and it's not all their fault. They need the training. And when you put on an ISA event, you've got to get help. So it's like sometimes you've got to get a warm body and put them in there behind a score sheet. And I get that.
Yeah. And do you know the thing is, like, judging an event, I've never been a judge, but I've looked at a score sheet while a climb has been going on, and I've been asked to be a judge a couple of times. But I compete quite a lot, but it actually scares me to when I look at the score sheet and watch somebody climb. I'm like, oh God, how would I score that? Like, where do I give them the points? Was the other person better? Because I can watch two people and kind of feel like in my eyes, so and so was better than the other person. But if I were to score and especially do it all day long, like it kind of scares me how I could be consistent and so it's not an easy task to do.
It's not, and it's laborious. It really is, and it's part of the reason. Another thing that we're doing with Naom, all those prizes. Excuse me, I had coffee breath and I burped. All the prizes that we get from our sponsors, those are given to the volunteers. Because the competitors, between the stage that we set, all the production value involved with Naom at this point, which by the way is almost 100% monetarily supported by the tree climbing community, not by sponsors.
Wow.
And I think that's something that makes it special, you know, because it has done so well. It has been, it's, you know, not just hype, but hype, the hype is real. And I think people have, you know, if you go there and you've been to the event, you see it, you understand why. But we've gone further in just a couple years than I think entities that are bigger than us. For example, with our we're putting people up in lodging. I had over 40 volunteers put up in Airbnbs out there in Savannah, Georgia, because it's just like, what else can I do to better serve these volunteers? I'm going to push them. I'm going to make them almost have to learn things that weekend. But Dan, what we're trying to figure out is, how do we get people, our volunteers, to be really be inspired to want to learn
and
right?
excited about coming? And and if you can make their trip easy and comfortable, and then they don't have to worry about all the logistics.
It does work out that I think people at this point have figured out that NAOM is a climber's comp, and it's one where people, again, they're really excited about climbing. They think about it all the time like I do. It's the thing we geek out about. So a lot of the folks that are showing up, they're game, they're ready, they want to do a dry run. They want to be able to demonstrate their skills and have their skills tested, even at the risk of, you know, having their peers around. But we treat that time, I don't want to call it sacred, but we have reverence for that time. I instruct people who are involved with the dry runs to make sure you're not grab-assing too much. You know, if you're going to say something to someone, it's got to be constructive and encouraging. But, you know, it's not just about chasing the bells. It's about how you do it. And so everything from our score sheets reflect that. We have our own scoring format. We're working hard to have the judges watching the climb and not the score sheet. So we have a very kind of a more broken down score sheet, and one that, in my opinion, is easier to understand and read and follow along with throughout the climb. But outside of that, also, people have probably seen pictures and videos, we have our nighttime open ascent, which I'm really proud of. Myself and Brian Brock years ago came up with that idea after just doing parties at our farm in Maryland, where we'd get together, we'd have a party, I'd put my slack line out, we'd get out there, you know, drinking a couple beers and slacklining, and I'd hang a light. And they were stupid lights, you know, then I'd have black lights and stuff. And we would just do that to fuck around and hang out and climb at night, you know. And that evolved to doing an event at Tree Jam Camp a couple months later. And then obviously, if you've seen pictures or video of the nighttime open ascent, it's very special. I think it's cool enough that a number of other entities took the idea. And initially I was upset about that, but the truth is, man, I'm honored.
The truth is, it's an awesome idea, and like, you should be flattered that other people have done that.
Yeah.
Especially if they saw it from your competition and took it on and thought, that's amazing.
Like, yeah.
That's just flattering.
I love the idea of my ideas being used on a broader stage. What did bother me initially was this, Dan, and I'll articulate this the best way I know how. I looked at, if I as a tree climber and someone who is as active as I am within the tree climbing community, and within just climbing trees, right? I thought to myself, if anybody should stand to benefit from my ideas, it should be me or my community. But when you have a multi-billion dollar company taking your ideas because they saw your shit online or whatever, it bothered me. It bothered me to my core because I felt taken from. And I'm like, fuck it. If you're going to take my idea, that's fine. But I wish somebody would take my idea for the way we do AR with the blind. I want ISA to take that idea. I think that'd be great for them to pick that up, because that way people can't hawk the climb. Once you're done the climb, if you're a competitor, you can go watch, you know, and there's been some people that felt like they weren't real happy with how that event was, in that you couldn't watch the other people climb, but you absolutely can after you have
completed the event. So that's what you mean about the event, about everybody who's not competed in that event can't watch anybody else until they've had their turn, and then they can watch everybody else after that.
Yes, and then we did get plenty of encouragement from a number of competitors who would go back and watch. You know, it's just human nature, but so, you know, you get more people kind of stack up and watch a more high-profile climber, so to speak, if I can say it that way. You know, if a James Earhart or Bull Hammerstrand went in there to do AR, you know, all eyes were on what's going on there, but I made that a quiet zone, because in years past, I had a lot of chattiness happening at that sequestered AR, and people would talk, they'd get there, they'd hang out and watch, but then they'd talk, and I was like, this is taking away from what I'm trying to create a very organic experience. And that's what's incredible, Dan, about the Sequestered AR, is you get an organic experience that is not just about competition. You're literally putting yourself in as almost as, you know, the best, you know, opportunity to create that scenario almost like it's real.
Yeah.
And people have come to me all the time when they're like, there's no other way this thing should be done, because you go in there and you learn everything in the moment. You know, you don't know anything beforehand. It creates a very genuine experience.
Yeah, it's the best way to create a real, as close to a real life scenario as possible. Like, it was, that's how Dave ran it at the Aerial Rescue Challenge, and yeah, it's the first time I'd ever done an aerial rescue where I'd been sequestered. Oh, well, I'd done a couple before where I'd been the first person to go, so I hadn't seen anybody, but that's the first time where I'd been at a competition where you were sequestered. And it was crazy because even like at the ISA comps where I'd done the rescue first, I'd still seen the scenario. I'd still possibly seen a run through of somebody do it first. Whereas when you haven't seen the tree, you haven't seen the casualty, you haven't seen the situation, it's crazy, because like you can't you can't prepare anything like you can in an ISA.
Yeah.
So you can't have all this gear preset, because you might get in there and none of it's any use.
It is so much more of a true test of your skill.
Yeah.
How do you perform under duress? Yeah. How do you perform when you weren't fully prepared mentally or your gear or whatever?
Yeah.
And that's definitely what we were after. Benito, I love you. So the Sequestered AR, great idea. I think it's, you know, the nighttime open ascent is so much fun, but that Sequestered AR is really the gem of the event.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of great people. Dave Stice has been helping with that over the past couple of years. A number of professionals, Steve is out there helping with that too. In any case, Richard Mumford and Marty Robinson, a great entry tech from the U.S. here, and a lot of really just stellar people that help make that event incredible. We have recently adopted some ideas from ARC, which I actually made an adjustment to our score sheets, and which the climbers all have access to, but on there for the ABCs, the airway, breathing, and circulation, which are really a part of the score sheet that the ISA events are missing. And that's, I hate to keep bringing ISA into this, but Dave said it. I listened to his podcast as well with you, which was great. You know, we discussed the idea that one of the issues that we've had with the ISA aerial rescue is you don't actually have 5 minutes to do the event. You do it in 5 minutes, you're timed out. You need to do it in 4 minutes and 59 seconds. So, you know, in any case, on top of that, they merit speed. You know, they give points, they award points for speed. And the truth is, if you did an actual live rescue in 30 minutes, that would be a world record, right? So what we used to think was a good training tool for aerial rescue, you know, you're more likely to become a second victim if you're getting somebody down in 3.5 minutes. But obviously their excuse over the years has been, well, you don't understand, Coates, we've got X amount of people to run through the event, so we've got to, you know, time's got to be a thing, and I get that, I do.
Yeah.
But we have been able to demonstrate that we can get 40 people through it in a day with a 10 or 12 minute AR. So we have been able to demonstrate that you can lengthen that time to give the climbers an appropriate amount, appropriate amount of time for the climb and to build a plan for the climb. And in any case, I'm very easily distractible. Buddies all around. We'll be talking to him. That's my buddy Josh. Okay, what else? I really love a lot of the things that we're doing with Naomi, Dan, and I want to get you to come out to that comp.
I would love to come out to
you
the comp.
You absolutely missed it. You have an invite. You absolutely have an invite. I'm going to be working hard to put together the next one in California on the West Coast.
Awesome.
We're really trying to create a circuit. This year I did 2 comps. I don't know if I'll do that again.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
And so do you do it near where you live, or have you done one?
We had one at the National Arboretum in D.C., which is a half an hour from my place. That worked out. It was convenient. I do have a good relationship with the Arboretum, which helps. But I'm really trying to create a network around the U.S., really in other parts of North America as well. We do have plans to start to travel north into Canada and down into Mexico as well. We do have some folks that have said some things to us, like, hey, we'd like to do a comp here. And I would love to grow it outside of the U.S. I am just thinking right now about North America, but I'm not thinking about going global with this comp or nothing. But if somebody did approach me, like maybe some other sugary beverage, if they, you know, if Monster comes to me and they're like, hey, Coats, you know, you got a good comp, we want to help you. And I'd be like, I'll take their money, Dan, but as far as the way the comp's going
to
be run, it's going
to
be governed by me and the climbers who put the thing on. We want climbing and competitions to be driven by the climbing community. That's very strongly how a lot of us feel. And these events for me have had a lot of teeth because we have a lot of tree workers dying here in the U.S., you know, and from obviously it's hazardous work. So these competitions can be an incredibly powerful tool to help educate people, get people inspired about arboriculture, and just keep people connected as a community. So I think there's honestly, the trade shows do a good job getting people together too. But I personally think bang for your buck, TCCs do it the best, you know. And so that's part of the reason I continue to be involved with them is you know, the power for good that they can have. And I think that any events that we're involved with, and I say we, is because there's a growing team that's involved with what we're doing with NAOM and Legends in Florida, which has become an incredible training ground for TCCs, in which we abide by an ISA format there. But we're training up 50, 60 climbers for 3 days during that week, you know, getting them up to speed on their skills, indoctrinating them with the thought processes of setup and with moving through a tree and lanyard usage. And, you know, not only are we training people to be better competitors, but also better tree workers, safer tree workers. But
I presume because you're trying to create these like real life rescue scenarios, part of your competition, it's actually quite exciting from competition to see what ideas you can come up with for next one, and because you try and make them quite outlandish.
Yeah, so recently we out in D.C., we had a scenario that initially didn't seem very pertinent. It didn't seem like it made sense, right? But then even since, I've seen articles pop up about it. But we had, my buddy Brennan Phillips came up with this idea where we would rescue a casualty from a tree on a parachute. And at first I was like, you know, what's great about it is it catches your attention. And, you know, it's this kind of wild looking scenario. And I love that there's almost like this production value to the rescue. But I thought initially, I was like, well, how often does that happen? Holy hell, it happens way more often than any other kind of aerial rescue that happens in America, because you have all these bases throughout the U.S. and they do this parachute training, and they'll often call in arborists to do rescues from trees and help these guys get down. So I was like, this is pertinent. This makes sense, dude. Let's do this. You know, after a little bit of research, we found that people were getting stuck in parachutes and trees and fire engines would show up to get them down or whatever.
One actually happened fairly close to where I live last year, I think.
Yeah.
And they had to get in search and rescue team to come get them out. Yeah. You know, but yeah, they got stuck in a big cottonwood.
Did you see the article? It was out there, Pacific Northwest, about 3 months ago. A little yellow plane got stuck in the top of a spruce about 200 feet.
No.
They sent an arborist up there to go get the people out. I got to find that article again, but I, you know, started looking at that, Dave. I don't want to ruin any ideas, but we did briefly discuss the idea of a plane in a tree, and obviously a lot's got to come to fruition, and I didn't spoil the surprise because we'll make sure we got a blind on that one, but that we could do that, you know, stuff that is not, I don't want to say not accomplishable with ISA events. We have this freedom to build what we want with this competition, you know, with ARC and with NAOM, we can do whatever we want, you know.
And that is the beauty of your competition. You're the driving force, and you kind of steer it in the direction you want it to go. Whereas The issue with the ISA comps and the problem that they have is that it's a format that has to be implemented for like worldwide, mm-hmm. that everybody can follow that same structure. So they can't, that's like you were saying, they can't really evolve. Oh, well, they can evolve, but it's very slow because they have to have so many people to go through to vet the rules and it's the whole committee.
And simultaneously, there's like every chapter has to grow up to those standards. Like people ought to realize there's almost a new chapter popping into the ISA events every year. You know, especially Asian countries growing, and now we're ISA's got more chapters that are popping up in South America. And I love it. I think that's great. I would love to help with some of that, help grow tree climbing throughout the world that way with TCCs, because it can be a great way to connect with people. Yeah. You know, and I've been out to Hong Kong twice now and out to Taiwan just this year with my buddy Josh. And those were all connections that I made through TCCs and knowing people who competed, you know. And that, I know that's the tip of the iceberg for me. We're scratching the surface of what we can do in tree climbing and how we can grow the sport and how we can grow recreational tree climbing. I think we're really at the forefront of it, you know, but I think the lifestyle that we're trying to create, it didn't exist, but we're creating it, you know, and it's wild to see what's happening, see that being built and being a part of it is really cool and rewarding. If you're like I am, if you did it, a bit of rock climbing when you were younger, and I did. I wasn't very good at it, way better at tree climbing. My body type is strange. The fact that I ever had any success in tree climbing is kind of weird because I'm shaped like a potato. But I felt like, oh my gosh, where was that idea at? Where tree climbing is going right now, at least for me, I love the idea of traveling. I know you do too. And the opportunity, if you're like, hey, I know a couple of buddies down there in Mexico, and I'm, even if you're just friends online, and you see a TCC pop up, you can hit that guy up and be like, hey, you need some help putting your comp together, or do you guys want some extra competitors? You know, like that mixing of people and the cross-pollinization of all that helps make the comps better. Oh my gosh, we need more of that in the U.S. I will tell you right now, I don't know how it works in the U.K. or in Europe or other countries of the world, but the U.S. has struggled over the years with ISA comps integrating people from outside chapters. You know, I know my chapter, the Mid-Atlantic chapter, has very few people that come from outside of our chapter to either help volunteer or to compete. And it's been frustrating for a lot of us. We've had discussions behind the scenes. But that's been a weird and sensitive issue for people. They don't feel comfortable discussing that. And I'm like, why? Let's you know, get some fresh people in here, some new blood. And it's always difficult for people to figure out how to integrate that, because ISA has built this format where it's like, you're from here, you're from here. You don't go and compete here. The guy who wins this, he goes here. Like, I want to, honestly, my vision of a utopian idea of a tree climbing competition, it doesn't matter where you're from. You know,
just
almost
open arms chapter-less. Kind of thing. Yeah.
And I think that's why some of this has happened. The Red Bull comp, doesn't matter where you're from.
Yep.
The Jambo, doesn't matter where you're from.
Yep.
Naom, Legends, all of the independent comps, in my opinion, are going to rule the roost in the future because they do so many damn things right. Like, ISA is doing great. They've built a great game, but there's been an evolution of tree climbing and competitions, and people, they crave more. They want more, you know. And I think those events, part of the reason they're doing a bit better in terms of popularity lately, I've got a pretty good finger on what's happening.
Yeah.
Those events are becoming more popular because they get at more of what people are wanting. They're a little less industry based and more about connecting people, I think, and have more of that climber culture that we want.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dan,
I love the fact that there's all these new types of competition kind of popping up everywhere, and like yours, the more competitions the better, because each individual competition will have its own kind of set of rules. It will have its own specific events that person who kind of starts a competition, for whatever reason, that's how they feel a competition would best run for them, or they maybe if they were to compete in it, that's what they would want from a competition. And like, so I just have had the experience from going to do the Red Bull competition, and man, I've never had so much fun at a competition in all the competitions I've been to. It was like everything. It was the just the amount of competitors that they had there just made it amazing. So the amount of spectators watching everybody else and cheering, the like yours, they had music all day long playing. Most people got to climb multiple times.
I like that. Yes, more entry time.
Yeah.
That's one of the, and think about when you show up to, I'm going to say it again, you show up to an ISA event, and you look at internationals, man. The internationals is a three-day event.
Yeah.
Right? And the average for a competitive climber within the ISA internationals, you're going to spend 8 or 9 minutes. Do the math, right? You got a 3.5 minute work climb, 3.5 minute AR. That's your entry time. And then you've got an ascent event, which is seconds.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 8 or 9 minutes of climbing for fucking 3 days. Get out of Dodge. Like,
That's why, like, so whenever I've made the Masters in an ISA, I'm so happy because I get to climb for like 25 minutes. And it's like, you get to kind of set the stage from having nothing in the tree, and you get to do the whole, you know, install your lines, climb around, and that pretty much makes me so happy to reach the Masters, because I'm like, yes, I get to do this whole climbing. Extra climb.
Yeah, that's the gift, man. That's what we started realizing. And, you know, you'd go out to a chapter comp, you know, outside of your chapter, and, you know, you do really well in the prelims, maybe get first or second in the prelims. And if you're lucky, that chapter might give you a shot to compete in their Masters, you know. And for me, I worked my ass off to figure out how to beat James Earhart in my chapter in Mid-Atlantic. So, and I went, you know, 11 straight years in the Masters, and I couldn't get past him. You know, and he's just, him among others, there's 10 incredible tree climbers in our chapter, or more, you know. Jeff Inman's in there. And it's like, you got to work your ass off to it. That's a strong chapter. Now we have Josh Burr. But in any case, so if I went to the, let's say, Tennessee tree climbing comp, no, that's not a good example. They're a state comp, but great comp, actually. But the if you went to the Southern chapter and you got a, you know, first or second in the prelims, you know, they might invite you in to compete. But it was just, and now I bring that chapter up as an example, but there's been chapters that I've been to where I might have bested the prelims, right? And all I ever wanted was a shot to run the Masters. I don't give a shit about the prizes, and I know so many climbers in the U.S. and throughout the world feel the same way. But these chapters, they're groups of people. They just, you know, and maybe never had that conversation. They didn't know how to articulate why they would tell you no, or they wouldn't understand, like, the pain that you would feel because you didn't get a chance to climb. Again, you know, even though you might have earned your way. And I look at it like this. We've been discussing this more openly now, so I feel comfortable talking about it. But a lot of those climbers that are traveling, they want that shot. They want that shot to run the Masters. Obviously, they can't go represent the chapter. But they just, it's like if you showed up to El Cap, right? And you're like, oh, I'm sorry, Dan, you're not from here. So you don't get to climb this. And you're like, whoa, I came all the way here. I wanted a shot to climb El Cap. That's a lot of money you expended. It's time. It's... We are doing that shit because we love to climb. We don't care about no booty. We want to measure our skills against our peers, against our friends, and we want an opportunity to demonstrate our skill. I never looked at it any other way. If that's selfish, then so be it. That's what we want. That's what a lot of climbers have wanted. And that's why another reason that I think some of these comps, like Naom, having an open Masters, having a shot to really run a Masters that way, is got people excited, because they don't have those barriers to entry.
Yeah.
You know, gives you opportunity.
And I suppose that's why for a competition like yours, you probably get so many people, not just from the area where you're holding it, but from all over, especially all over North America.
Yeah.
Whereas in the chapter comp, you might get like
might
one,
two or three.
Maybe two people from out of chapter come in, and yeah, so it kind of opens the doors for everybody to attend. And then, so if you're a person that only has ever really competed in your chapter, you know the guys that are going to be there.
Yeah.
And like, in each competition, you might get like 10, 15 people that you haven't seen before if it moves around it within your chapter. But you know the people who are definitely going to be there, and then you see the way they climb, and you kind of know.
Oh yeah, if you got a good gauge of things.
You kind of know what's going to happen and who's going to do what. Whereas if you can go to a competition where there's 40, 50 climbers that you maybe only know one or two of them, you've never seen any of them climb, you kind of learn so much more, you make kind of way more friends, and you just kind of expand that network of arborists.
Yeah.
And it's like, as soon as you go to a competition with people you've never met before, just because you're at the competition, it feels like you've already got this kind of connection, mm-hmm. and it's not like you're talking to a stranger in the street. You already feel like you know the person because they're at the same event that you're at, and mm-hmm. you've got like common ground.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we're lucky, man. We're fortunate to be in an industry that there is that sense of community. You know, you look at people who are, you know, washing windows for a living. I don't know if they get together and have conventions for that, but maybe they do. But you know, the idea and that there's this sense of community, and I'll call it family. It's really family for me at this point, because I grew up, I didn't have much in the way of family. I, you know, got kicked out when I was 14, so I don't stay real well connected with my blood relatives. And over time, the tree community became my family. So that's definitely where I am, and that's why I take things as seriously as I do with the TCCs, because that's your family. You tell your family you're going to do something, you fucking do it, you know.
Yeah.
Or you make a promise to somebody, anyway, but yeah, we do. We have that commonality, and you know what I want to do, Dan? I want to grow that family somehow in the next couple of years. We got to start figuring out, you know, there's a lot of talk and discussion about how we can grow TCCs in the U.S. and how we can popularize tree climbing and recreational climbing, and everyone's got ideas. And for so long, it's been like, say stuff or educate the broader world, you know, and talk to Sally Sue, and you gotta educate the public about this stuff. And I don't think that's the case. I personally believe if you're gonna grow this sport and you're gonna grow tree climbing, you have to find the existing people that are within this industry and make them fans of the sport. All right, so, and that's one of the things that I've been focused on over the past few years, is if I get somebody to come to Legends or NAOM and I'm going to train them up, I'm kind of talking to them about the ideas of all these things, about tree climbing and, you know, how you can figure out how to climb and have fun after work, and really getting people to kind of drink the Kool-Aid of what is tree climbing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think once people get that bug, and you can make all of these new cats that are coming in, if you can make them fans of the sport, we can grow the sport exponentially faster.
And I find that, like, the way you talked about that, that's kind of what gave me the passion back for being an arborist. Because I, after about 6-7 years of working in the industry, I was kind of sick of it. I was done. But
yeah,
at that point, I'd never been part of a tree climbing competition, never taken part, never volunteered, nothing. Mm. And as soon as I started with the competitions, I kind of got this spark back for being an arborist. And ever since then, I've absolutely loved my job. And I don't see that going away, because everything that's happened since then is kind of built on top of that. And like, I just really enjoy having the community of friends around me that are arborists. And it makes such a difference from looking to when I was like 4 years in the industry working for a company, and the guys I worked with were just there for a job. They didn't care about trees. They were just there to get a paycheck, kind of thing. And I think having all these different types of competitions and meeting the people that go and hang out with each other, and, you know, everybody's camping together and everybody's just like
passionate about what they do.
Yeah.
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 I mean, how do you make yourself better? You surround yourself with other people who are either better than you or absolutely have the same passion that you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't wake up this way every day, Dan, but I really do try to keep it in my mind, like, when I wake up, get up, you fat bastard, go attack the day. Be the best that you can, and go, you know, go carve yourself a place in the world.
Yeah.
Go make something of yourself. Go do something good. You know, and I think that we need to, you can recognize those people, your peers. You're like, I probably don't want to be friends with that cat because, you know, he's fucking up. He's disinterested. He lacks passion. Obviously, we always work hard to bring those people in. But yeah, it's, we want to connect with people that that have that same drive that we do and the same desire to succeed.
And yeah, and that's how we're going to end up enjoying life. If you enjoy the work that you do, then like it doesn't matter if you're making millions or not.
That's right.
Does it? Like,
that's right.
Yeah.
And that especially applies within arboriculture because you can.
Sure.
I mean, every day you think you went out and made money, and you never. It's hard for us to realize how much we spent doing it. You know. Yeah, but I'd rather be broke and happy than. And I mean, there's all kinds of data on that too, man. They say it after $75,000 a year, you're no happier, you know. So if you're hearing this podcast, if you're killing yourself for $100,000 a year,
brain in a little bit,
you're not going to be any happier than it, you know, if you made less. But anyway, so.
But yeah, I'm. Really appreciate you doing this, Chris, and giving up some time to
sit
down and have a bit of a chat with me. And maybe in a few months' time we do another one so we can really get into more about your competitions and different ideas and where they might be popping up around the place.
I've got some great ideas.
If
some of the stuff that I disclosed to you this evening you might have not known about.
No.
But I've got so much more to share with people that has happened the past few weeks and really a couple days pertaining to the TCCs that we're involved with. But I'd love to get together with you again and discuss Legends maybe right after it happens, if that works.
Maybe
give you a rundown. I really want... this year I want to get ISA involved with what we're doing. I want them to see what we've done with that competition and how it's become... A training ground for the young people, younger people, if I may say. If you're 39 and younger, you come to help, and you put the comp on and you run the score sheets. And if you're 40 and older, you compete. And that competition, unlike any other, in my opinion, in the world, is all about service. NAOM is definitely about service, but Legends is a competition about service, just in like none other. Because you're really sacrificing, you're putting in a lot of time. People are showing up on Tuesday to start to put together that event. It being so grassroots and the fact that people are now taking off a week or more to go out there to be a part of it, I think shows that it's what people want to do.
Yeah.
So I want to discuss with you about that thing for sure.
Definitely.
I want to share those ideas, and I'm hoping that people will learn from what we're doing and maybe either try to replicate it or... They can tell the world about what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Telling people about the ideas will help some people kind of spring into action and be like, oh, we can do that.
Yeah.
Or they're going to hear about it and be like, right, I'm going to that next year.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So, wicked.
Dan, thanks you for your time, man. Bro.
Yeah.
Sorry I chatted your head off. I had full disclosure, I had too much coffee.
No, that's what it's all about. I'm here not to say a lot and to... People want to hear what you've got to say,
so that's awesome.
Great to meet you, Chris.
Thanks very much to Chris Coates for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate you giving up your time at the TCI Expo. Fantastic conversation, such a nice guy. That was the first time I'd met Chris, and I already felt a super connection, like we'd known each other for a long, long time. So thanks very much, and I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. This podcast was also brought to you by Jobber Business Software. Jobber is a business software that helps me run my own business, and it's been fantastic since I implemented it. It makes everything more streamlined. It makes me more organized as a person. It makes me not forget to invoice jobs like I used to do. So I can really get behind Jobber as a product. It's been absolutely fantastic for me, and it will continue to be a really great service. Of the listeners of this podcast, Jobber are offering a 14-day free trial, and then if you like it and you want to sign up after the free trial, you can get 20% off your first 6 months subscription. So that's a 14-day free trial, and then 20% off your first 6 months subscription if you really enjoy it and you want to sign up. Just go to climbingarborist.com and you'll see a Jobber image across the top banner. Just click on that, and that will take you through to the link to get you that offer.